Thank you. Well, I'm really delighted to be here. I will talk about some new subject for me. I was involved in this subject 2 years ago. I heard about this subject almost 15 years ago, always considered it very boring. Found recently that it's actually very exciting. And it's an old problem of pattern formation in nonlinear, non-equilibrium processes and nonlinear processes called viscous fingering. I'll explain what it is. Apparently, this problem, mathematically or physically, depends on the taste, related to a number of problems of theoretical physics. Few of them are mentioned. I will be glad to talk about all of them, but instead I will concentrate on the less formal relation between viscous fingering and quantum Hall effect. So this story takes place either at room scale or at geological scale. So it's a room experiment. It's a very classical story. And that stuff takes place in nanometer scales. They are described by the same equations, scaled by the factor 10 to the minus 9. Both phenomena described by the same equations, which are scaled by a factor 10 to the minus 9. Okay, so let me... So those are the people whom I work with. Those two are from Hebrew University in Jerusalem. This person is from Moscow. There's a number of people whom I talk to. And let me come to straight to the subject. Okay. This is what is called Hellischau, sorry. This is what is called Hellischau cell. It's a two glass plates which are parallel and brought very, very close to each other, as close as possible. The space between them is filled by viscous, very viscous liquid. Let me call it oil. Now, in the middle, there is a hole, and through this hole, an incompressible but not viscous liquid is pumping in. Let me call it water. So the story, everything in Hellischau geometry provides reducing geometry, so it's a two-dimensional. The phenomena which I'm going to talk about is enhanced by reducing geometry. This is what happened by this plane. So the story is, I have a plane covered by oil. In the middle, there is a droplet of water. Both liquids are incompressible, but viscosity is very different, and this is approximation. Viscosity of oil is infinity. It is infinite. Viscosity of water is zero, but both are incompressible. Now, here in the middle, there is a pump and the source. Through this source, water is supplying here with a constant rate, say 1 cubic meter per second, constant rate. Oil goes away to a drain which is located somewhere at infinity. Both are incompressible, so. The area of this, and they do not mix. So the area of this water domain grows in time linearly. I supply water with a constant rate. And therefore, the interface advance and progress. So the question is, what would be the evolution of the interface? Okay. It's almost clear that if interface has a ideal, is ideal circle, then due to all the symmetries, it will remain as a circle. So it will, the droplet, water droplet getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but will be still a circle. Same with ellipse. Ellipse will progress to be ellipse. However, all other figures destroy themselves. And the story is that a small bump and small imperfection deviation from the round shape is unstable, and this instability grows on, producing a complicated pattern, and this pattern are called fingering instability. This is what we actually see. This is a typical fingering pattern. Now, I can show you, in this subject it's customary to show pictures, so but I will try to minimize this. I'll show a few, just a few. Okay, now the question is, what's the origin of this instability and who does, which parameters control the instability? Those fingers are pretty round in this picture, and the tips are controlled by surface tension. So there are two parameters which play with to play with. It's a surface tension, which make stuff rounded, and a rate of supplying this product. So how fast I pump the water, so it's a rate. So they compete. Clearly, if I supply water very fast, the surface tension will not, does not have time to equilibrate, and the picture will be much rougher and more ramified. This is also experiment, some different composition of liquids, I forgot which one. I think it's a liquid crystal, and this is probably water. And so this is much more branching story. Surface tension simply doesn't control this. This stuff can progress, and in ideal situation, the story will be very, 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 very branched. It will forget about initial data pretty soon. So if you start from a circle with a small bump, or two bumps, or whatever initial conditions are in the beginning, in a steady regime at large time, it will be pretty branch stuff. It is believed that it's a fractal, and the fractal dimension is a bit less than two. I mean the dimension between linear scale and the area. So area scaled, in this case, as a radius, a size, in the power less, a little bit less than two, which is approximately numerically is known to be 1.68 to 1.71. Would I have some other occasion, I may prove that this dimension is related to certain dimensions of which people studied in quantum gravity in 1991. It's supposed to be 5/3. I'm not going to talk about it. Okay. This is another picture. It's how flame propagates in the situation when convection is small. And you can see the fingering. It's experiment. You can see this fingering pattern very clearly. In general, all these patterns in non-equilibrium process are loosely can be divided in two classes. One is where convection takes place, and this is famous Rayleigh-Bernard pattern. But sometimes convection can be diminished, either it just can be small, or set up may be arranged such that convection simply doesn't occur. And this, then it is diffusion which drives the pattern. This story I'm going to talk about, it's a diffusion-driven pattern. Some famous problem which is related to this, I don't have time to talk about. It's called DLA, diffusion limited aggregation. It's a related problem. So no convection, but diffusion.
Just a short question. Why do these branched lines never reconnect? At least I don't see that.
Hmm?
The branched lines, they don't reconnect.
Yeah, it's they're advancing. So they're getting larger and larger.
What's the reason why there are no reconnections?
You pump this water, right? So this branching, if they occur, they try to avoid each other, certainly. They go in all directions. They never connect.
The question is why?
I couldn't give a reasonable... I don't know, maybe it's happened, but it's a very rare event, and as far as I understand, no, in liquid experiments it have never been seen.
I mean, it might depend on the source, so you had a linear source.
Yeah, probably. But what actually happened that this water droplet may separate and create another droplet. That's happened, but not that holes appear in the water domain.
What is that control by?
It's two parameters, surface tension and rate, how fast you go. Okay.
In this case, it's not diffusion, right? It might be the
I'll come to this. Just a second. Okay. Mathematics which control this flow is pretty simple to formulate, difficult to analyze. And let me explain this. Viscous fingering also comes sometimes under the name of Safmon Taylor, who studied propagating of finger in a channel geometry in 1958, I guess. Okay. Okay. Here's the equations. Both liquids are incompressible, and therefore pressure is harmonic function in all of them. Viscosity are very, very different, and it's two dimension, and one can deduce from the Navier-Stokes equation that pressure in water, in less viscous domain, can be said to be constant, I said zero. If surface tension is taken into account, then pressure on the interface is proportional to surface tension times the curvature. But I will ignore surface tension for a time being, so pressure can be set constant on the interface. And harmonic function in the oil domain with a source at infinity. Okay, these two form a Dirichlet problem. So it's a fine harmonic function with a source at infinity, which has a certain boundary value on the interface. Once this problem is solved, one has to compute a gradient of the pressure on the interface, and this is a velocity of how the front progresses. So the velocity of normal velocity of this point would be the gradient of pressure at that point. This is it. And sorry? Oil must go away somewhere. Sink. It's a pretty simplistic story. So the way how computer generates this pattern is the following. So it draw a domain, solve the Dirichlet problem on this domain, then compute the velocity, moves this domain, again solve the Dirichlet problem, again move the domain, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, Hellis-Shaw's cell provides two-dimensional geometry. The story is sometimes called Laplacian growth, namely that velocity is a gradient of a field, and the field is harmonic. There is a number of phenomena which are driven by the same, more or less the same equations. So this is diffusion. Okay. No, viscosity assumed to be infinite. It's an approximation. So large. Otherwise, viscosity will come and correct those equations. Okay. Now I would like to tell you. Okay, what actually controls the dynamics is incompressibility. The water domain is incompressible and growing. So the area is fixed by how much water you supply. The shape is not fixed and has to be accommodated those equations. So it's incompressibility which drives this pattern. Okay. Now, this is problem number one. Another problem, similarly unrelated, is electrons in the magnetic field. Right. So electrons in the magnetic field. I don't have place to draw a picture, but let me try. So I have a let me consider two-dimensional electronic gas, say heterostructure device. Electrons are sitting in a huge magnetic field directed up. It's a quantizing magnetic field, so electrons sitting only on the first Landau level. Now, let me assume that at somewhere in the origin, there is a very, very flat, arbitrary flat potential well. Okay, now I start to put electrons on this first Landau level. They will find themselves on the center of this well and eventually form what is called electronic droplet. I schematically drew the orbits of electron in a sort of semi-classical approximation. If number of electrons getting large, this droplet can be considered semi-classical, namely the wave function goes down very fast outside of the last orbit. It's a sort of edge state. And one can treat this droplet semi-classically. Because this droplet is sitting on the first Landau level, it's incompressible as well. And it's now incompressibility which drives its dynamics. Now I start to put more and more electrons here by switching, say, gate voltage in the heterostructure device. So number of electrons growing up. So this droplet is growing up. Okay. If magnetic field is homogeneous, uniform all over the places, then certainly the size, the shape of the droplet will be circular. However, let me do now the following. I would like to change magnetic field slightly somewhere in this corner away from the droplet. I would put, say, some few Aronoff-Bohm fluxes away from the droplet, not inside, but away from the droplet. Magnetic field doesn't change here, inside of the droplet. It's still homogeneous. However, there's interference effects, basically Aronoff-Bohm effects, and gradients of magnetic field away from the droplet will change the shape of the orbits. Of course, effect will be very small if those imperfections in magnetic field are well separated from the orbit. However, it's not that small. It's pretty big, and this is my story. It's not exponentially small, and it's going down. The distortion of the orbit will go down as a power law, approximately as cube of this distance, and the shape of the droplet will be distorted. And as it progresses, I start to add more and more electrons, it will be distorted more and more and more. And the message I'm going to deliver is that semi-classical dynamics of this droplet is exactly the same as propagation, advancing water in oil. This is entirely, okay, this is the message, and I'm going to sort of speculate about this. Okay. Now, particles located on the first Landau level in a very big magnetic, in a very big quantizing magnetic field is actually a topological theory. Let me tell you what I mean by this. The wave function written in terms of path integral consists of, a term which is proportional to the length of the trajectory, and they are in magnetic field. To be on the first Landau level means that mass of electron basically go to zero, and this term drops. The only what remains is interference term in magnetic field, which basically count number of loops. Okay, now let's assume that somewhere I put some Aronoff-Bohm fluxes. Then some particles will deviate from the semi-classical trajectory, go around, collect this information, come back, bring this interference information, and the shape will be disturbed. So the vacuum amplitude would be simply a counting of number of passes with a given winding number around every fluxes. I'm just would like to make a connection to some combinatorial problems. This is how it is. I will not come to this. Okay. Now, what I would like to argue is that equations which describe these two phenomena are entirely the same. The only difference is a scale. It's a factor 10 minus 9. The surface tension of this water domain, which can be derived from Navier-Stokes equations, for instance, by assuming that viscosities are not that different, then you can compute the surface tension through the difference of viscosities. Can be also derived from quantum mechanics. and it would be proportional to magnetic lengths. Okay, now what I mean by semi-classical limit, it's the following. So number of electrons in the droplet is large, magnetic length goes to infinity, but the area of the droplet remains fixed. So that's a... n goes to infinity, magnetic length goes to zero, sorry, but the area, which is number of electrons multiplied to a quantum of area, it's remain fixed. So I have this electronic droplet that size, and if, okay. Under these conditions, the wave function really dies very fast, and semi-classical approximation is possible. Okay. So the growth would be just simply increase number of electrons by one, so the area of the electronic droplet will be changed by quantum. By quantum, it's quantized. Whether in water domain, area change continuously. Okay. Now, I'll be, if I have time, I will be happy to discuss how much is the story is realistic, whether we can see fingering in the electronic droplet in real heterostructures. It's a complicated, controversial issue, but I'll put it at the very end.
I'm supposed to be thinking of imagining I have a small local gate here above my, near my two-dimensional electron gas, and charging that up in order to pull charge in.
Yeah, you have just a getter structure,
yeah.
Which the chemical potential is controlled by the gate. By increasing or decreasing the gate, you control the number of electrons localized in certain potential well.
I'm controlling a uniform
gate? Uniform gate, right.
And then I have some...
You have landscape which trap the droplet. Let me assume that landscape is very, very flat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the question is, usually if landscape is very sharp, that's a landscape which determine the shape of the droplet, its equipotential line. But let me assume that it's very, very flat, and magnetic field has some imperfections, some magnetic impurities away from the droplet, that these forces compete with electric forces which control the droplet. And my story begins when interference forces win.
I guess I'm wondering about electrostatics, as you're pulling more charge in to your droplet,
yeah.
you're changing
sure. Let me forget today about all electrostatics, right? And concentrate of interference. They compete. And
is there a parameter that you can tune to make one dominant?
That's a difficult question, but I'll be happy to discuss it when the story becomes a little bit more transparent. Right? I think that when we go to the plateau transition, electrostatic forces becomes less relevant than interference forces. And this is a parameter. But whether it can be realized or not, that's a problem. Okay, okay. Now let me come back to Hillis-Shaw problem. And
maybe I'm worried about the same issue that he is. I was wondering if you have to worry about the relaxation.
Everything is adiabatic.
Adiabatic.
Absolutely adiabatic. So magnetic field is set up doesn't change in time, but it's not homogeneous, and I slowly change the gate. Okay. Now, I'll come back to Hillis-Shaw stuff. Okay. The consequence of this simple Dirichlet equations is, if I forget about surface tension, is very simple and dramatic. One can deduct from them in one line of calculations that while the area of the water domain growth, the harmonic moments, the dipole, quadrupole, and higher moments remain the same. And this is reformulation of the problem. So here it is. Find a form of the domain whose area increases in time while all moments remain the same. Very simple mathematical problem. So you just take a domain, not circular, not elliptic, but some other. You increase the area, but fixed dipole, quadrupole, and all other moments fixed. And then you get these fingers. Okay. I'll skip this slide. It's a comparison of numbers in both phenomena. One is on room scale and another in nanoscale. But being scaled out, they appear to be almost the same. So interference effect produces viscosity a bit 10 times less than, say, water in liquid crystal. It's about the same scale, but I'll skip it. Okay, now, Hellischau's problem is the best seen in terms of conformal maps. Let me map the exterior oil domain of this droplet to an exterior of the unit circle. And this is plane which I call W, and this is Z. W of Z is the map. Then solution of the Dirichlet problem is simply log of this map. And the velocity is what is called gradient of this, which is called harmonic measure. In textbooks of complex analysis, this object is called harmonic measure. So my problem would be is to find evolution of conformal map if I increase the area, but all higher moments are conserved. Or I can consider evolution conformal map when I increase the area and also change the moments as well. So it's a problem of evolution of conformal map while I'll change the domain.
What's the area?
Area in terms of? That will be next slide. So the problem, let me explain. So I have a domain. I map it to a unit, unit disk. Now I change the domain somehow, conformal map also change. I would like to study how. Okay. I'm assuming that it's not brain cup, but it comes to this in just in a second. Okay. We studied this problem a year ago and found that this simple problem about evolution of conformal map is described by total lattice, dispersionless total lattice hierarchy. It's happened. It's a problem, classical problem of 19th century complex analysis. Eventually, it is described by non-integrable systems, and I know that David and Joe are very familiar with this system. It's a dispersionless total hierarchy. Let me briefly say what I mean by this. Let me take inverse map, W2z. Because I map infinity to infinity, it can be written as a truncated Laurent series. And those coefficients, they will describe the map. So my question would be, how do these coefficients depend on time? Apparently, so what I would like to do, I would like to differentiate the map over the, say, some dipole moment, K moment, and see how does it evolve. It evolves according to some Hamiltonian flows. Those Hamiltonian flows commute. And the evolution according with increasing area is described by some equations which has been appeared in some string literature, which is called string equations. Let me explain what it's written here. This is what is in the box is a reformulation of this simple Laplacian growth. I have a map, conformal map, which depends on the area. Time is the area. Okay. In addition to this, I would like to consider Schwarz reflected map conjugation. Now, apparently, all these equations can be rewritten in the form that a Poisson bracket of these two equal one, and by Poisson bracket I mean that a face on the circle where I map the domain and the area are canonical. These two boxes are another reinterpretation of this of this Laplacian growth.
The equations about the box is equivalent to the two equations in the box.
Yes.
Mathematically,
it's one line of calculations. I skip it, but those who familiar with diffeomorphism can recognize that this equation is simply an action of W infinity group, and they reflect the only one simple thing: the domain of the water is incompressible. This is what they say, that it's incompressible. Area must be conserved. So the shape must change. It's written here. Okay. One outcome of this work is classical problem of complex analysis. You have a domain mapped to a unit disk, right? According to Riemann mapping theorem, this map exists. Now I would like to change the domain and ask, how does the map change? It changed according to this dispersionless Todd hierarchy in the basis of moments, harmonic moments. Yeah, it's a standard notation, right? I don't want to concentrate on this. I just want to go through this as fast as possible.
Just notation-wise, that equation, the quotient bracket of GMT-bar, looks like, if you go to the corresponding quantum computation relation, it looks like the computation relation of the guiding center coordinates.
This will be my next slide. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Now, unfortunately, this problem has an obstacle. If I ignore the surface tension and take an arbitrary domain and grow it, then at finite time, I will come to a singularity. It's called finite time singularity, very well known in this business. So if I ignore the surface tension, these equations will drive me to something unreasonable. And then, if the front becomes very curved, the equations are not applicable anymore. We have to come back to Navier-Stokes equations, take into account all these viscosities, surface tension effect, and all this stuff to resolve the singularity. Those equations do not resolve the singularity. They come to the singularity and then becomes not applicable at very curved shapes. But the interesting story comes exactly after the singularity occur, and this is where this branching begin. Okay, so the problem now is how to regularize this equation such that they go through the singularity somehow and then continue to evolve. Based on the conjecture that the way how do you resolve the singularity will not affect the big pattern. It's again controversial conjecture, but I will start to assume this. So the conceptual story is that doesn't matter how you resolve the singularity, once it goes through, it will develop a big pattern, will do not depend on the mechanism how do you resolve it. It's a question mark, but I'll sort of stick to this. Okay. One way to resolve the singularity is simply to introduce this surface tension, and this will never happen. But then the problem becomes highly nonlinear, impossible to solve, impossible to simulate numerically. So it's dead end. Okay. Well, the story is a bit similar to what happened in turbulence, but I will not speculate on this. Okay. Now I would like to come up with a suggestion how to resolve the singularity. It's a very general story. So I would like to resolve the singularity such that the mathematical structure, which is related to integrability, will remain intact. Here what I would like to do, and this is a sort of a drastic step. I would like to take a look on this water oil business and would like to formally quantize it. Don't ask me why. Formally quantize it. Why I'm going to do this? Because I realize that this singularity comes because the original problem have no scale in the system, just no scale. And then that's what happened. Quantization, however, introduces a scale, which is a Planck constant. And it sort of guarantees that nothing can be, no singularities may occur on distances which is less than square root of Planck constant. Planck constant has a dimension in this, has dimension of area. So it looks like you're start to adding particles here by a certain size, which is about the Planck constant. So it's then quantization will curb the singularity. Okay. It's a formal procedure. I will quantize it, get something which is now well-defined, and go back to classical limit. When I do classical limit, I will find that if I approach to flat part of the front, classical limit works well, semi-classical limit works very well, and quantization was irrelevant. But when I come to here, semi-classical limit simply doesn't work. There are Stokes lines, turning points, stuff. Semi-classical limit becomes non-analytical. And the idea is that if I study how much it's non-analytical, I will understand what happened in microscale here. And that would mean that I would probably understand what happened on the larger scale. So this non-analyticity will propagate and will describe the fractal dimension of the big tree. It's again assumption, sort of conjecture.
So but this is sort of like doing second Taylor for a non-unitary.
Yeah, but just let me say this. Okay. What I would guarantee by this, that if I quantize it, that matrix elements of the quantized problem will evolve according to Todd hierarchy. So integrability will, so. But it all can be put in physical terms. There are many ways to quantize it. But the simplest way is just to look on this equation. It's already put in the form ready to quantization and replace coordinates by operators. Post some brackets by commutators. This is what we get. And and the next point is to find the representation of this one.
To worry about ordering problems and things like this?
Everything, right. Everything.
Because you have log W being quantized.
Yeah, yeah, everything. Just skip it. But oh, it can be done.
Can be done.
Well, this story has been done in in some literature, so I'm just repeating, but it's a clean story, but I just want, don't want to, it's not, it's a serious one. Just give me a second. Okay, if I look on these equations, okay, these equations, this computational relation has plenty of representations, and I have to select those which I need to match semi-classical limit. So, and this is a very restrictive procedure. What it tells me that this can be interpreted as a coordinates of electron in magnetic field. In magnetic field, we know they do not commute. And the representations of this algebra is would be equivalent to solve a Schrödinger equation for electrons in very strong magnetic field. Then Z and Z diagram will be simply a holomorphic and anti-holomorphic part of the momentum. They do not commute in magnetic field. It is just equivalent story. Okay. That's how we came to, okay. Let me show some formulas. Some formulas. If magnetic field is uniform, then Schrödinger equation in for electrons in magnetic field is easy to solve. This is a solution. So it's a multi-particle wave function would be a Vandermonde of the coordinates. It's from the textbook, so I will not specify it. This function is mostly familiar for fractional Hall effect called Laughlin function if there is this exponent m here. But I'm talking about integer Hall effect, so it's just this. So it's a Vandermonde multiplied to the wave function written in transversal gauge, multiplied to the exponent of z square over magnetic length. That's from the textbook. Now, if I start to study with this wave function in large n limit, I will find that all these z's are located in a circular domain and distributed there uniformly. Okay, but this is for homogeneous magnetic field. So if I add another electron here, n to n plus 1, simply this domain just will grow a little bit to accommodate more particles. So this droplet grow up, up, up. Okay, now let's see what happened if magnetic field is non-uniform. But let me repeat that I would like to consider non-uniform magnetic field away from the droplet. Droplet is here, magnetic field is uniform, and imperfection is made in that corner, far away. Well, this wave function easy to modify. You simply have to say, you have to simply change this modulus of Z square by the potential of the magnetic field, and that's it. Okay. Now, I take magnetic field, a non-uniform part of magnetic field, and characterize it by its dipole, quadrupole, and higher moments. This is its characteristics. Then the potential will be changed by adding a harmonic function. Harmonic function, why? Because I change magnetic field far away, not inside of the droplet. So inside of the droplet, magnetic field is uniform. So this is just, sometimes it's called singular gauge transformation, but it's just a harmonic function.
So that's path independent and confused?
Written in transversal gauge. So the wave function is written in transversal gauge. The wave function becomes, the wave function simply modified a little bit by adding this tail. Okay. Well, then it's a multi-particle wave function. Now let me study a probability to add a particle in a droplet. It's a simple overlap between n and n plus one states. So I'm looking for a probability to add a particle to a droplet. This will give me a velocity, how this droplet grow. I look for a probability to add a particle. So this is given by the amplitude of the wave function, and the wave function now would be written as I overlap these two in the following form. Again, this is given by a multiple integral that is square of the van der Mond operator determinant, insertion that I add a particle, and the potential of the magnetic field.
I'm not sure I understand why it's an overlap. I would have thought the electron density would be the square modulus of the wave function, and if I'm asking.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. In this story, electronic density it's an integral of this multi-particle wave function, or all coordinates except one would be a sum of what is called one particle states. And this state is an overlap between n and n plus one particles. And this function is just simply written here. So then velocity propagation, the front will propagate with velocity, which would be equal to the difference between those densities. Okay. Here's how it looks like, and one can notice that this integral can be also written in terms of what is called normal matrix model, or non-Hermitian matrix model. I'm not going to concentrate on this, but just a link.
But N has to be normal.
N is N by N matrix.
Has to be normal?
It's a normal matrix, because it now has Z is a complex coordinate, so it must have.
So you say P of n is just the same as psi of n.
Sorry?
P of n is equal to psi of n? Psi
is a classical part, a potential, which is magnetic field, multiplied to some polynomial.
Oh, and that polynomial?
And this polynomial is written over there. It's a complicated polynomial, Of course, if magnetic field is homogeneous, I can compute this polynomial and it's equal to monom. It Pn would be z to the n. But in a non-homogeneous magnetic field, it's a complicated, rather complicated object. Okay. Now the next point is this quantized version of this Hellschau problem, or electron in a non-uniform magnetic field, the wave function is a Baker-Heiser function for two-dimensional Toda hierarchy, and it's obey some nonlinear equations with respect. If I change magnetic field, the wave function also change. Okay. To find the semi-classical limit, one has to find a saddle point for those particles, but in the presence of some imperfections of magnetic field. Now I make a big step and write a solution. Let me assume that the front is flat. Then the semi-classical limit can be, we can proceed to the semi-classical limit in a regular way. The problems will come if the front is sharp, but I'm not going to talk about it today. But let's assume that it's flat. Then the wave function is given by this multiple integral or string polynomial, matrix polynomial, can be written in terms of conformal map. Here's how. Once again, I'm making a big jump here, and write a result. So all the eigenvalues, all the ZIs will be concentrated in a domain which characterized by the area, which is number of particles multiplied to the magnetic length, square of magnetic length. It's a given parameter, and by parameters k, which are harmonic moments of non-uniform part of the magnetic field. This is what is given, it's my data. By having this data, I can construct a domain which has this area and this harmonic moments. And this is where wave function will be localized. So this function has a minima on this domain. So wave function is localized just on this domain. That's fine, but I'm looking mostly on the prefector, and prefector is can be computed also, and is a harmonic measure of the conformal map of this domain to unit circle. So what is written in this box? It's a semi-classical wave function for electrons moving in non-uniform magnetic field. In the textbook, we know the semi-classical wave function move in homogeneous magnetic field. Usually it's written, in this form. That's in homogeneous magnetic field. And what is written in the box, it's an extension of this result, but not for inhomogeneous magnetic field. And as you can see, you're asking me in which book the wave function for electrons in homogeneous magnetic field are written? In the book, you can read about a particle in homogeneous, uniform magnetic field. Okay, this is extension, this result, to a particle moving in non-uniform field. It's a bit more complicated, but tractable. It's built mostly out of conformal map of the classical trajectory to a unit circle. One can think about it as a wave function of the H state, if H state is not a circle, but some complicated domain. Okay. Now this is my final point next. So wave function, the probability to add a particle in point Z is, of course, localized on a contour, which is written, which is information about this contour is taken from non-uniform part of the magnetic field. And the prefactor is harmonic measure. Then I would say that here's an interpretation of this quantized Hallis-Shaw problem. Velocity is a probability of growth, of adding one more particle. And as you can see, it is just harmonic measure. And this is exactly match the classical version. So it's just, so what I did, I quantize the problem and I move back to semi-classical limit. If the front is flat, it's no problem. And they, of course, match each other. The interesting story begins when the front is curved. Then the semi-classical limit doesn't work, but it's known. Well, in literature for two-dimensional gravity of 1991 as a double scaling limit. And this is the first singularity.
You're saying the singularity is universal.
So the way how to go through the singularity is simply, okay, it's a quantizer problem, but then go back to classical limit, and classical, it simply doesn't work that easy, that simple. There is an interesting behavior over here. I'm not going to talk about it. What I want to say today, that evolution of water domain in oil, water pushing oil, and formation of these fingers, it's almost equivalent to a dynamics of quantum electronic droplet in homogeneous magnetic field. And all this analysis is correct before we reach the singularity. And the singularity will be always reached. That's almost this story. And that's almost this story. And so let me summarize it. If I have a quantum droplet in magnetic field, now we start to grow. And I put few Aronov bomb fluxes over there. This can be viewed as Aronov bomb effect, but in the strong magnetic field. Now I change gate voltage, number of electrons increase. Increasing number of electrons means that the area of the droplet increased by quantum. What's the shape of the droplet? So the story is the droplet will be highly deformed and eventually come to a strong singularity where this analysis stopped to be valid. And there is no semi-classical analysis hold here. It's a complicated story. And basically my message would be that if you take a Hall effect in this idealistic setting where no electrostatic forces are involved and all this stuff, then a small imperfections in magnetic field create a strong interference effect, which eventually come to a singularity and breaks the semi-classical analysis, which we usually apply to, this is usually the way to think about it. So the wave function here is pretty complicated, and in the flat part of the front, it's exponentially decay away and inside. So this means that the edge state is disconnected from the bulk. Here, the situation is very different. The edge state is very connected to the bulk. It's decayed down in a rather complicated way, but not exponential. It's a Pavlov decay, very slow. And those singularities are inevitable. It's always always happened. Some small deviation of homogeneous in uniform magnetic field eventually bring this trouble. Okay. Okay, now a few things which are not covered. The mathematics which appeared here can be simply borrowed from literature of on two-dimensional quantum gravity with C less than one and topological field theory. It's basically the same story.
Do we obtain a prediction for some of the fractal experiments?
And the numerical, it is 1/16. Quantum gravity gives 5/16. But, okay. This diffusion limit of aggregation community fight very strongly against it. A bit different. Another interesting subject which is involved, which I didn't talk about, but it's purely mathematical, it's the fact that evolution of conformal maps obey is governed by integrable equations. It provides an interesting connection between complex analysis and integrability, which can be used in many to solve, not to solve, but to reinterpret some classical results. One of them is constructive proof of Riemann theorem, Riemann mapping theorem, proof of Weber-Bach conjecture, a lot of things.
Homogeneous magnetic field, we know that the quantum Hall effective theory is the transient
thing. Yes. As soon as the front is flat, as soon as the edge state is flat, mm-hmm. it's a Chern-Simons theory. It doesn't matter
right.
how curved it is.
Right.
Chern-Simons theory, as we know, is
topological,
so the metric play no role. But this is true if the bulk is separated, well separated. So we can talk about edge state, which is just as edge. But at that point, the bulk is not separated, and there is no Chern-Simons theory simply. But there is another conformal field theory, different one, which serves this point. So the standard description of the edge states is simply broken at the sharp edges.
Mm-hmm.
It's not conformal, but it's still universal, but another class of universality. And it's quite interesting to understand what it is. So tunneling from the edge state to somewhere, to another edge, from this sharp point is huge and much bigger than what happened tunneling from this point. But again, it's another story, and this is the most interesting story. But once again, I didn't just talk about it. I wonder whether those sharp edges may have something to do with the plateau transition, but it's an open question. It's a, I'm not in a position to discuss even this, but want to say once again that, let me repeat, that small imperfection of magnetic field produces a very strong effect on the semi-classical dynamics and eventually will inevitably break semi-classics. And what happened in this point, it's a sort of a new physics from a quantum Hall point of view. But from a point of view of this branching, propagating water and oil, this is where the story begins. So this is a branching point, and after reaching the singularity and being resolved, these fingers start to grow. Quite interesting numerical observation that number of these branches which comes out of this point, always 5.
What, and the 5 is the numerator?
It's just numerical fact. So this this branching pattern. Unfortunately, for this picture, in this picture, I don't see it. But it seems to me that it's more than five. But in some better pictures, there are five major branches. And this we don't know, but we come from assumption. I'm sorry. There are several types of singularity. The cusp may be characterized by two numbers. How fast they go, right? So x to the p equal to y to the q, and x and y is the position of the singularity. So how fast they go, right? And of course, physics of around this will depend on the sort of singularity. The simplest one, 2, 3, provides two branches. The other singularity provides more branches. That's the story. See, on this picture, we can see that it's branching always twofold. Yeah, this is all the singularity are critical points of the matrix model, of course. Mm-hmm. And that's how they make. It's entirely the same mathematics. So the only difference is that those critical points have been studied in one matrix model, and this is sort of two matrix model. Not a big difference. Okay, thank you very much. This is a quantum field system. It's a topographical map of electronic droplets in heterostructure. So what you can see here is just electronic orbits adding more and more electrons. This experiment is very controversial, so it is joke. But it's not impossible to see curved droplets. This is a tunneling. This is a sort of relatively new scanning technique, which works as follows. You have this two-dimensional electronic gas. You come with a tip of tunneling microscope and wait before one electron tunnel. You register this point, and then you move it around and wait before next electron tunnel. You register that point and draw the equipotential line. The difference between that line is just adding one electron, so it's orbits. But this experiment is rather controversial and difficult to interpret it because it's very invasive. So it is tip which, it's electric experiment, so the tip which come disturb everything around itself.
Who's experimenting this?
It's Ashuri. Ashuri group.
They're not looking at tunneling electron gas to the tip. I mean, they have some SET in there, intense tunneling, and then measuring changes in the electrostatic potential sensed
from
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there, electrical contact.
Yeah, there are two techniques. One is this, another is the.
I don't think there's any tunneling directly. Point contact.
No. You're right. It goes through the capacitor. But I'm showing this picture not because it's a very invasive experiment, so it doesn't tell anything. It's impossible to interpret it. But there is a possibility to see. Just single electronic orbits. It's not the droplets which I was talking about. Those droplets sitting here, mostly controlled by electrostatic landscape of the heterostructure devices. So it's not that phenomenon, but since you asked me. Okay, thank you.
I have one more question. I think I asked this before at some other occasion. So using the matrix model technology, could you also access the spatially dependent fractal properties of the cluster, the multi-fractal properties? And what would it have to do within the matrix model to access the information?
I have the following view, which just conjectured, but not proved. So the view is that I quantize the system, I have parameter h bar. I would like to send this h bar to zero. If the front is smooth, okay, it goes very easily, and the expansion in the Planck constant is regular. So it's expand, every quantity will expand in a regular series in Planck constant. But here, semi-classical limit also exists, but more complicated. It goes through with certain exponents. It's non-analytical. It's related to this critical point of matrix models. But eventually they can be recomputed through the... Okay, now I would like to speculate that this non-analyticity, which come on a micro scale, just here, will eventually propagate to a large scale, and fractal exponent of the large scale will be read through the non-analytical structure of the singularity in the micro scale. So we want to describe large pattern.
But that's a speculation.
It's a speculation, that's right.
No. 5 theorems is just a speculation.
Speculation. So, but it's a sort of, philosophy that what controls the big pattern? One can say that big pattern controlled by branching points. So there are two issues. How many are branching points and what every point contributes? Okay. So what this conjecture means that it doesn't matter how many of them because they contribute a lot. And if you know how many one point contributes, that gives you universal part of the big scale. But again, it's just a conjecture.
Suggesting a possibility. Obviously, the problem is very difficult. But there is this one case where you can just write down the wave function, the total wave function of the electron, which is if you extend the problem and include the spin such that the G factor is exactly equal to Q. In that case, the problem becomes supersymmetric, and you can just write down the wave function. Is that somehow a way to test your results?
This is the way how I actually proceeded. So what the all formulas which I wrote are written for Pauli, for spin polarized relativistic case, where due to this supersymmetry, the wave function can be written exactly in any field, including inhomogeneous field, and then you can study semi-classical approximation.
How relevant is
The semi-classical limit is the same. So the wave functions are different before semi-classical limit is taken, but after it's taken, it doesn't matter.
Okay, let's thank Professor.